Good afternoon. It's 5:06 and 51 degrees here in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Leanne Akers.
It's pretty much a historical site. They started business there in 1973.
A beloved community restaurant burned in Elliott County last night. More than 600 additional COVID-19 related deaths have been identified in Kentucky. Up to 650 million new tax breaks were pushed through the state General Assembly this week. Education leaders are pushing back against a school choice bill. A long-delayed aluminum plant project near Ashland is facing yet another setback. In sports, the Eagles are headed to the first round of the NCAA tournament tonight. Bud Luke has the stock report. Clear skies tonight with a low around 29. We'll have a look at your region's extended weather forecast after this news. An Elliott County business that has long served as a community gathering place for locals caught fire Thursday night. Firefighters were called to the Frosty Freeze along Kentucky 7 in Sandy Hook just after 8 p.m. Fire Chief Jamie Stevens says the fire started in the upstairs portion of the building, but its cause is unknown.
I'm guessing it's going to be 100% loss on it. There's a lot of water damage downstairs. The roof and stuff is burned off of it, so I'm going to say it's going to be 100% loss, but you know, the insurance company may be having different thoughts about that.
No one was injured in the fire. Steven says the business will be sorely missed by the community. An audit of the state's death certificates has increased the number of COVID-19-linked deaths in the state by more than 600. The Beshear administration audit pulled all death certificates from November through the end of January that listed COVID-19 and compared them to the list which first come through local health departments. The result was 604 additional deaths.
And my belief is it'll probably take a decade after something like this. And many states are doing what we're doing. Some haven't even started it to know the full devastation.
The audit comes as the state sees more encouraging news in other trends, notably the positivity rate, which has dropped to 3.23%. That's the lowest since early July. Fayette County education leaders are speaking out against a bill supporters say will expand school choice for lower-income students. Critics view the measure as a negative for public schools. The bill in question creates education opportunity accounts funded by donors who would receive a tax credit. Students could draw on the accounts for a number of school-related expenses, but it's one in particular that has Fayette County lawmakers and district leaders concerned: private school tuition. In a floor speech, Lexington Senator Reggie Thompson said the idea is receiving pushback.
It's going to continue to dwindle and siphon off and strip away money that's going to go to a public education so that private schools can benefit from that.
Fayette Public School leaders, including Acting Superintendent Marlene Helm and School Board Chair Tyler Murphy, followed that lead, issuing statements opposing the idea. While the measure could be in line for a gubernatorial veto, it's unclear if the education reforms could survive votes in override. A Kentucky economic think tank estimates up to $650 million in new tax breaks were pushed through the state General Assembly this week. WUKY's Josh James has more.
Senate Floor Amendment 1 to House Bill 113.
As lawmakers race to send a large stack of new bills to the governor for his consideration, a number of tax breaks were tucked into the legislation. The Kentucky Center for Economic Policy warns that those breaks might mean Kentucky would have to repay some federal pandemic relief funds to the federal government. Critics worry a provision in the American Rescue Plan barring the federal funds from directly or indirectly going toward tax cuts could wind up costing the state should it be found in violation. The Lexington Herald Leader reports the tax breaks and incentives range from the relatively small, a sales tax break for vaping hardware, to the much larger, a restoration of a $75 million refundable tax incentive meant to make the state more attractive to film and TV producers. The mounting tax breaks have been the target of policymakers on the left and the right, but limiting or eliminating them has proven an uphill battle. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
Some Kentuckians got personal help from the former unemployment insurance director at the request of superiors, including Lieutenant Governor Jacqueline Coleman. According to WDRB News, in at least four instances last April, Coleman texted the then executive director of the Office of Unemployment Insurance, Muncie McNamara, asking for special attention to certain people's unemployment claims. McNamara, along with Commissioners of Workforce Investment Marty Hammonds, quickly got to the Coleman's requests. Governor Beshear said in a press conference Monday that no one's position should influence where someone is in line to get unemployment.
Certainly, nobody's position should influence where somebody is in that line. But if there are people that are struggling to get their unemployment and their information's been provided and we can send that on to the office, you know, that's something that, other officials have asked for, and that's a conduit we have tried to allow.
Kentucky has received nearly 2 million unemployment insurance claims since the start of the pandemic and paid out nearly $6 billion, including federal supplements. State officials reminded Kentuckians the real ID deadline is quickly approaching. WMKY's Rachel Turner has more.
Those who plan to fly on commercial or domestic flights, enter restricted federal buildings, or go onto a military base on October 1st and after will need a real ID. There are several differences between the traditional Kentucky license and the real ID, but one of the most noticeable might be the star in the upper right-hand corner of the real ID. There are currently 15 regional real ID offices open across the state of Kentucky, including one in Moorhead. According to WKYT, those who plan to get a real ID will need to bring a few items: proof of identity, proof of social security, and two ways to prove residency. For WMKY, I'm Rachel Turner.
After the Atlanta murders, Asian American Kentucky business owners voice elevated fears. According to WKYT, a record number of hate crimes against Asian Americans was reported during the pandemic year. Kim Hewen is an Asian American business owner in Lexington. She says when something happens to one member of a marginalized community, it affects the community as a whole.
I don't know how to feel. I don't know what to feel. I'm still processing. I own salons, and most of my staff is not only just female, they're my family.
She encourages Kentuckians to get engaged in the conversation by using the hashtag #StopAsianHate on social media. February ice storms caused extreme damage in Kentucky, but some families serviced by Windstream have no phone or power long after the ice has melted. A family in Rush doesn't have phone or internet and fears an emergency with no way to call for help. Becky Salyers tells WSAZ the family has been without phone and power for 5 weeks.
My mother's 80 years old, and if something happened, we have no way of calling to get emergency services out here.
Neighbors say restoration dates continue to be pushed back. The University of Kentucky students living in residence halls have not been allowed to have visitors for most of the 2020-21 school year. One student is calling on school leaders saying it's time to loosen some of the guidelines. Freshman Levi Montgomery tells WKYT many of the students in residence halls are not getting what they bargained for.
The CDC, since the beginning of the pandemic, has said it's okay to be around people that are in your bubble. But the people in the university still don't allow people that are in their bubble to come in.
School officials say if cases continue to decline, UK will consider further revising policies regarding visitation and gatherings. A long-delayed aluminum plant project near Ashland is facing yet another new setback. According to a Bloomberg report, Rusal is suspending its investment in the company while it awaits word that its U.S. partners have raised the necessary funds to move forward. Rusal has sunk at least $65 million into the proposed Unity Aluminum Mill, formerly known as Brady Industries. The project has been plagued by fundraising questions and the ouster of the former CEO. Rusal's involvement has been controversial from the start after it was revealed that the company had been subject to sanctions. Under former Governor Matt Bevin, Kentucky pledged $15 million in taxpayer money toward the project, but current Governor Andy Beshear has repeatedly vowed to get the money back if the mill doesn't materialize. The man who opened fire at the Jeffersontown Kroger in 2018, killing two black shoppers, has now changed his plea in federal court to guilty. Gregory Bush was indicted on six counts resulting from the murder of 69-year-old Maurice Stalliard and 67-year-old Vicki Lee Jones and the attempted murder of another man. Bush has already been convicted to life in prison in state court. A plea agreement stipulated he'd change his pleas to guilty in federal court. According to WYMT, Bush said he believed the change of plea was in part helping him avoid the death penalty. Bush first appeared reluctant to confirm the crimes were racially motivated, but ultimately said they were. Bush's sentencing is scheduled to be complete in June. Taking a look at your region's extended weather forecast for tomorrow, sunny with a high near 58. Saturday night, clear skies, a low around 33. Sunday is sunny, a high near 64. Sunday night, clear, a low around 36. For Monday, sunny skies, a high near 65. Monday night, partly cloudy with a low around 42. And for your Tuesday, a 20% chance of showers in the afternoon hours, otherwise partly sunny with a high near 66. On our feature segment today, commentator Dr. John Modaff is getting juiced about electric vehicles.
17 million vehicles are sold by automakers in the U.S. each year. Of that number, the federal government owns more than 600,000. The military owns about 250,000. Keep those figures in mind as we proceed. The first electric car was produced in the late 1800s. The motorized carriage could scoot right along, was quiet, used an emerging technology for power. So what killed the electric car back then, and should we be reviving that corpse? One three-letter word describes the death knell for electric vehicles more than 100 years ago. That word is oil. Cheap. Plentiful. Magical. Oh, and dirty. Deadly. Corrupting. That oil. The case for the electric car is environmental. Oil production is ecologically costly, dangerous to health, and leads to exploitation of peoples and places. On their face, appealing electric vehicles are sold by politicians and producers as a clean alternative. Who wouldn't wish that to be true? There are a few problems, however. The power plants that provide the electricity for the cars and their production are nearly all fossil or nuclear-fueled and will need to continue to be so to meet the rising demand. Renewables are a fraction of energy production, and wind farms chop up birds in a birdocost of horrifying proportions. While emission data show that electric vehicles in use do emit less than petrol-based cars, the electricity production required to recharge the vehicles has a high cost in lives and pollution tied to the increased production of electricity. Is it worth it? I'm not saying it isn't worth it, but let's not pretend there are no costs. The environmental damage done to mine and manufacture the materials needed to produce and maintain electric vehicles is horrifying. Every bit as shocking as the damage is done by coal, just for now on a slightly lower scale and far, far away from the USA, so easier to ignore. According to the UN, quote, reserves of the raw materials for car batteries are highly concentrated in a few countries. Nearly 50% of the world's cobalt reserves are in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. 58% of lithium reserves are in Chile. 80% of natural graphite reserves are in China, Brazil, and Turkey, while 75% of manganese reserves are in Australia, Brazil, South Africa, and Ukraine, close quote. Countries where the populations are, we might note, marginalized or otherwise put upon for a host of reasons. Extraction and exploitation, anyone? Overview. Purchase price, higher, requiring tax breaks to encourage what otherwise would be a bad economic choice. Maintenance, difficult and expensive now, might improve as more EVs are used. Battery replacement, the mining, the making, the refurbishing, the extraction, all environmentally damaging in unique ways. Hardly a clean, safe alternative to your oil-driven ride. Oh, and this is the short list of potential problems, but maybe this is enough to get us thinking carefully about the federal government's plans to convert its entire fleet to electric vehicles. I'm John Modaff.
Dr. John Modaff is an author and former professor of speech here at Morehead State University.
Support for MSPR comes from the Mountain Arts Center, presenting the Appalachian Arts and Entertainment Awards Saturday, March 20th at 7 p.m. A virtual event. Tickets can be purchased online at cmh23.com. Awards presented by the Mountain Arts Center, Big Sandy Community and Technical College, Prestonsburg Tourism, CMH23, Highlands ARH, and UK Healthcare Markey Cancer Center. The Appalachian Arts and Entertainment Awards on Saturday, March 20th. Tickets and information online at cmh23.com.
It's 51 degrees here on the beautiful campus of Morehead State University. I'm your Mountain Edition host, Leanne Akers, here with Daria Denisenko, and we're coming to you live from the Larry Netherton studio here in the historic Breckenridge Hall. Shamari Mosley has a look at sports coming up, but first, I want to say thank you. We're so glad that you can spend time with us on this lovely Friday evening.
Men's basketball team is heading to the big dance tonight. For WMKY Sports, I'm Shamari Mosley. The Morehead State men's basketball team will play in the first round of the NCAA tournament tonight. The 23-7 Eagles face off with the third seed Mountaineers of West Virginia. Head coach Preston Spratlin says his team is ready for a tough contest.
Bob Huggins, West Virginia team, they're going to be very physical, very tough, very rugged, great defense, great rebounding team, good size, and this year, you know, very good offensive team to go along with it from what little bit I've watched over the past couple hours here. So it's going to be a great matchup because in our league, we kind of have the same identity.
Game time tonight is set for 9:50 p.m. You can listen to the game live on our sister station, WIVY. The Morehead State baseball team is on the road this afternoon. The first of a four-game series with Norfolk State began at 3 p.m. Head coach Mike Aoki says his team knows a little about what to expect from the 3-10 Spartans.
They're one of those teams that I think we have to worry about ourselves, worry about us being the very best that we can be and not necessarily playing to the opponent.
A doubleheader is set for tomorrow at noon. The two teams also face off at noon on Sunday. The Morehead State soccer team is on the field in Indiana this evening. The Eagles are set to face off with Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, at 5:30. Head coach Warren Lipka says his team is expecting a tough battle.
We're playing a team that's red hot, an SIU. I mean, they're scoring goals and winning games, and they've got a great deal of experience on the field, up front, and that kind of shows. So we have our hands full, going there.
Game time is set for 6:30 this evening. Live stats are available on msueagles.com. Morehead State's football team is defending against Stetson University this weekend in the first home game of the season. The Eagles are currently sitting in the 10th spot in the Pioneer League, while the Hatters hold the 7th spot. A win for either team would be the first win of the season, as the Eagles have an 0-2 record and the Hatters are 0-1. Head coach Rob Tenier says the team is excited to play at home and in front of fans.
I know the guys are excited for a home game. I know I am. Get to play in front of some of our own fans, and it's been a long time, so we're excited about that opportunity for sure.
The game will take place at Jane Stadium at noon. Live stats will be available at msueagles.com, and the game can be watched on ESPN+. The Eagles softball team welcomes Tennessee Tech for a three-game series this weekend. Morehead stands at 6-9 on the season, coming off of two big wins over Kentucky State on Wednesday. Head coach Samantha Jones says she hopes to see that momentum carry over into play this weekend.
I think that's what got not only our staff excited, but honestly just our student-athletes. I was like, hey, you are really good. Our record may not show that right now, but you also have to understand that we've played some pretty good teams in our conference.
Game time is set for 4 p.m. on Saturday. Sunday's doubleheader is slated for 2 p.m. Morehead State's volleyball team is heading to Richmond this weekend for one last match against longtime rivals Eastern Kentucky University. The Eagles are currently tied with Jacksonville State for the number one spot in the OVC Conference with a 12-0 record, while the Colonels sit at ninth place with a 2-10 record. The game will take place Sunday at 4 p.m. at EKU. Associate head coach Kirsten Becker says EKU does not have a chance to be a part of the OVC tournament, so this will be the last time the two teams face off as members of the OVC.
So Eastern Kentucky has a young team. They are very talented. Right now they're battling some injuries, so it's actually a bit of a question mark of who will be able to play in our matches. So it's fun preparing for a team that you're not exactly sure what they have.
Live stats will be available at MSUEagles.com. The Eagles will be in action again at 6 p.m. on Monday at EKU. And that's going to do it for sports this evening. For WMKY, I'm Shamari Mosley.
Bud Luke has a look at the stock report right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from Rutabaker's Bakery and Cafe, across from St. Clair Healthcare on Flemingsburg Road in Moorhead. Rutabaker's has made-from-scratch cakes, scones, cookies, and cinnamon rolls. Lunch items feature signature sandwiches, braids, and salads. Rutabaker's Bakery and Cafe. Open Tuesday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Curbside delivery at 780-4282, Facebook and online at rutabakers.com.
Good afternoon from the National Offices of Robert W. Baird. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. The Dow Industrials fell after the Federal Reserve decided not to extend a pandemic-era capital break for banks, and this stoked a sell-off in bank stocks, which, of course, have been among your leaders with the market as of late. And the Dow Industrials did finish with a loss of 234.33 at 32,627.97. The S&P 500 was down 2.36 at 3913.10. The NASDAQ Composite, because of strength in big tech, bucked the downward trend of the other indices, as the NASDAQ was up 99.07 at 13,215.24. The NASDAQ, of course, being about a half a percent higher as investors bought the dip in tech shares. And among individual tech stocks, Facebook was up almost 4%, while Amazon and Netflix both rose about 1% each. The 10-year Treasury bond finished flat at about 1.73%. and continue to hover near 14-month highs, which actually were hit yesterday. In earnings news, FedEx jumped 6% after a strong quarterly earnings report, and Nike dropped 4% after third-quarter revenues came in weaker than expected. In the commodities markets, oil was up 2.5% at $61.47 a barrel, while gold was up 0.5% at $1,741.70 an ounce. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was CSX down $1.74 at $90.77, AEP up $1.07 at $83.67, Marathon Petroleum up 91 cents at $53.76, App Harvest was down 32 cents at $21.59, and Community Trust Bank was up 92 cents to finish at $45.94. Reporting from the National Offices of Robert W. Baird, this is Bud Luke.
And that's going to do it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. Today we had help from Tanner Boyd, Greg Jenkins, Paul Hitchcock, Carrie Stambo, Daria Denisenko, Ben Hall, Rachel Turner, Levi Bryan, Carla Haight, Josh Groban, and Shamari Mosley. WUKY's Josh James, the Robert Baird Company's Bub Luke, and our feature segment came from commentator Dr. John Modaff. Our theme music is composed and performed by Allison Brown. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY, Moorhead, Kentucky. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For all of the MSPR News team, I'm Leanne Akers for WMKY News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5:30.